Fifth-year radio from London, a bilingual radio to listen and think.
The program co-hosted by myself, Andre Lopez Turner, and Juan Toledo in association with extraradio1.com and ztrradio.podomatic.com welcomes Jennifer Robinson, human rights lawyer for Julian Assange, into the studio alongside Fidel Navais, the ex-consul for the Ecuadorian embassy. Welcome.
Hello.
Thank you for having us.
As I understand it, Julian Assange, the famous founder and editor of WikiLeaks, is in real risk of being extradited to America, potentially. Is this sort of currently where we stand at the moment?
Yes, this is and has always been our biggest concern in this case as it relates to the risk of extradition to the United States. When WikiLeaks first started publishing material in 2010, people forget about those publications, but it was the Afghan war logs, Collateral Murder, which was a video showing Americans shooting down journalists in Iraq, the Iraq war logs, which showed that the American government had not been disclosing to the American people just how many civilian casualties had been in the war, and of course Cablegate, the US diplomatic cables, which showed human rights abuse, corruption, torture the world over, that Amnesty International said had contributed to the Arab Spring and pro-democracy movements around the world. So in that context, the US started a criminal investigation into Julian Assange and WikiLeaks in 2010 for having revealed this information. Now, that criminal investigation is, as we understand it, unprecedented in size and scale. We know that from Australian diplomatic correspondence. And we know that it's ongoing, so it's been more than 8 years now. That risk is real, and that risk is the reason why Ecuador granted him asylum in the first place. It's the reason he's inside the embassy today. And that risk has only increased over time with the Trump administration. Since Trump came to power, key officials within his administration, including the current Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, when he was the director of the CIA, said that prosecuting WikiLeaks was a priority, that the CIA was going to take down WikiLeaks, and that Julian Assange would not benefit from constitutional free speech protections if prosecuted in the United States. So we have real concerns about what would happen to him if Ecuador removes the asylum that was granted or otherwise requires him to leave the embassy. We are very concerned that he will end up being extradited to the United States to face prosecution for releasing information in the public interest.
Yeah, very, very serious. Fidel, you being the ex-consul for the Ecuadorian embassy, and most of your tenure was under the wonderful President Rafael Correa, I'm aware that there's been a change in government in Ecuador with Lenin Moreno coming into power. Is, from your experience, this quite a concern, this change of president in association with Julian Assange?
Yes, I think the risk of Julian ending up in a U.S. prison has increased not only because Mr. Trump is now the president of the United States, but also because the political change that took place in Ecuador last year. Since May 2017, President Correa, who granted the asylum, is not the president anymore. There's a new president, which was supposed to be the continuation of the progressive government that Ecuador had in the last decade. But surprisingly for many of us who elected President Moreno, there's a huge shift in his policies. In all senses, the economy, obviously, but also the foreign policy. And it's a foreign policy who is a lot more lenient to the U.S. And U.S. interests and U.S. pressure on Ecuador. And I think one of the main issues on Ecuadorian foreign policy, obviously in the last 6 years, has been the asylum to Julian Assange. So I'm also worried about the developments that are happening in my country in general, but in the case of Julian, especially, since I know him very closely.
What do you think the change in the new policy with Moreno? Any particular reason? I mean, you were saying that it was expected to continue with Correa's policies, and particularly in this case with the sort of kind of protections against somebody like Assange. Why the change? What do you think that is? I mean, you said that it's more lenient towards, you know, the Trump administration, etc., but why? Or what do you think?
Well, it's very interesting question. Why such a big shift? He won the election on the platform of the support for the citizen revolution and Correa as
he was the vice president, wasn't he?
He was the vice president in the first Correa's period for 4 years, in fact for 6 years altogether, and after that he was the envoy for disabilities at the UN in Geneva, also supported by Correa's government. It's no doubt that I think Ecuador at the end of Correa's presidency needed quite a bit of a shaking in the society. Was very much polarized. The progressive government implemented by Correa meant that he had to face very, very strong factical powers in the country that we thought that they were defeated. They were not. They are alive and strong, and they are back taking advantage. Then Moreno has basically got into bed with them.
And Jennifer Robinson, since last December, Assange is an Ecuadorian citizen. He has been granted Ecuadorian nationality. In legal terms, what does it mean?
Well, of course, that means that he benefits from all the protections under the Ecuadorian constitution. As an Ecuadorian national, he isn't entitled to those protections. Of course, he also remains an Australian citizen, so yeah. He's a dual national. Mm-hmm. And both the Ecuadorian government and the Australian government now have obligations to him as a citizen to protect him from, and have the obligation under international law, and in fact the right under international law, to exercise diplomatic protection.
And what is the position of the Australian government? They have been very silent for many, many years. Well, we know that Australia tends to go towards the right side of the spectrum in political terms. What is the position, official position in inverted commas?
Well, the official position, as stated by the Australian government, is that they continue to offer him consular assistance. But what does consular assistance mean? In effect, it's mean nothing. Of course, as a fellow Australian citizen, it is incredibly disappointing to me that my government did nothing to protect an Australian citizen at risk, which was a large part of Ecuador's, factored into Ecuador's decision to grant asylum when they did, which was the failure of the Australian government to take action to protect their citizen. And of course, there was a huge amount of backlash in Australia as well, that the Australian government was not willing and able, as a great ally of the United States, as a member of the Five Eyes, was not able to seek the assurances that we were asking them to seek to protect him from extradition. And in my mind, what does the alliance with the United States mean if you can't ask those questions of your ally? Unfortunately, when the politics, the political interests are so big, Australian citizens fall by the wayside.
Yeah.
It seems, at least that's what this case demonstrates. And it's a real shame. It's a real shame.
Yeah, it is a real shame. I mean, when you think of what I know of Julian Assange, which isn't as much as you two do, but, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, this is a man that stands up for transparency in the media. Yeah, he's an editor of an organisation called WikiLeaks. Does the Wiki come from Wikipedia, by the way? Where does the Wiki name come from?
I don't know. I do believe that the prefix Wiki means global editorship.
Okay.
And so basically it means
anybody can.
The concept is that anyone can leak. Yeah. Anyone can leak information to WikiLeaks, in the same way that anyone can edit and contribute information to Wikipedia. Anyone can leak to WikiLeaks. And that's... You know, it's a really innovative model in the sense that they've created a Dropbox system, which has now been adopted by mainstream media organisations. It's been replicated because of the recognition that it is a great model, which allows people to give information anonymously and protect their identity, which encourages more people to come forward and give information. And that's key for our democracy and for the proper functioning of the media.
And countries like Australia, England, the United States constitutionally pride themselves on being free and open and having a free and open press. However, as we know, that's debatable, if not a farce. But this is a man who actually walks the walk and talks the talk on this matter, who's then not being protected for doing so. Would you say that's kind of accurate?
Absolutely. What WikiLeaks does is no different in many senses to what the mainstream media does. And in fact, the New York Times in-house counsel, David McCraw, said this just recently to the media, and it's the position he's adopted throughout, which is the position we've adopted, which is WikiLeaks receives information from anonymous sources and publishes it once they verify that that information is accurate and it's newsworthy. They publish it. That is exactly the same act that the media engages in all the time. And the concern about the criminal investigation in the United States is precisely this, that by criminalising him, by investigating him, by prosecuting him, it will send a chill, set a chill on all journalism in the United States, because the government cannot distinguish between what WikiLeaks does and what the media does. The only distinguishing factor is just how much WikiLeaks challenges power. They have a robust publication policy. They publish. If they receive it and it's verified and it's newsworthy, they publish it, irrespective of the politics. And I think that is why he has been such a so vilified by the establishment and also pursued in the way that he's been pursued, because he doesn't have the cozy relationships that other editors have with government. And as a result, he publishes in a more robust and critical way that really holds people to account, and they don't like it.
Just to trace it back a bit, I mean, WikiLeaks was around for a while, and then something really significant happened that sort of detonated the whole process of it. Which one was it? Was it this Chelsea Manning releasing footage of American soldiers shooting people in Iraq? Was that start of it on a sort of more mainstream global level?
Well, Jennifer, before the program, was talking about two videos. I think there's one called Collateral Murder. Mm-hmm. Because it's interesting, a note here in the conversation. I remember reading a lot of stuff when WikiLeaks was producing it. That was in 2010. Mm-hmm. The whole stuff, that the Iraq war is going on, so WikiLeaks started to produce these things. Mainly, the information comes from the Department of State of the United States. So it's about diplomatic sources making comments about almost anything, because the United States is an empire, so they were talking about everybody. So Assange identifies certain media outlets, The Guardian, The New York Times, La Liberation in mm-hmm. France, I don't remember any other newspapers.
Le Monde Diplomatique.
Le Monde Diplomatique, yeah,
País,
thank
in
you,
Spain.
Thank you, yeah, correct me, thank you very much.
Spiegel,
and most of the stuff that you were able to read, in certain ways, wasn't too damning about the Department of State. And some of the comments were witty, quite accurate. I remember reading something like Putin describes an alpha dog by the American ambassador. I think that's kind of accurate, to my mind at least, you know, my Western bias. A point of view about Russia. But the fundamental one was this collateral murder, and another one, which was basically a military mistake or a military assassination, in inverted commas, during the war, and the Americans didn't like that at all. And that was one of the main things against him.
Well, WikiLeaks have been publishing for some time, and in fact, I had been following their publications because they published things like the Guantanamo Torture Manual. They broke the injunction here, the Trafficura injunction.
WikiLeaks starts in 2006, isn't it?
That's
and
right.
And we're talking about 2010, so for 4 years they have been doing publishing stuff.
They had been publishing really important... I mean, the human rights community and the journalistic community was paying attention, but he didn't have the profile as before. And I think some of the key earlier publications were, like I said, the Guantanamo Bay Torture Manual, the Trafficura super injunction, where there was a super injunction preventing publication here in this jurisdiction about the toxic waste dump off the Ivory Coast that had affected, you know, thousands of people. And so people started to pay attention, but it was really the material in 2010.
Jennifer, that's prior to 2010, all these documents
exactly.
that you're talking about.
That was all coming out before 2010, and it was in 2010, like you said, with Collateral Murder, Julian did a press conference at the press club in Washington, D.C., showing this video. At the same time, WikiLeaks had released a diplomatic cable, and I think the United States government really realized then that they must have a government source and were very concerned about what they had. But it's interesting what you say about how you reflect on the State Department. In fact, before WikiLeaks published the US diplomatic cables, Cablegate, one of the first things he said to me was, the State Department comes off well in the sense that their material is really well written and really well researched. Yeah. They're going to hate that this is in the public domain, but it's important for the international community to understand this and for the public to have access to this, to know how the American government operates. But he said the State Department does their job.
And it's quite interesting because now we're going with the Trump administration a real dichotomy between the diplomatic force of the United States or the diplomatic body and the Trump administration. They don't like each other, obviously, because how can to be a diplomat with somebody like Trump. But this separation between the people representing the country and the people running the country in Washington.
I mean, cover-ups of this type have happened ever since we've been around as human beings. And what came to my mind was, I think it was My Lai, something in Vietnam, was a very famous one.
Well, Vietnam,
famous because they covered that up or tried to cover it up. Massacred a whole village in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And I think Colin Powell was associated with that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, my point being, no one's clean around the world on any tangent. And this is a man who is very interested in obviously making the world a better place by making it open and transparent. Because if we know what these things are happening, then usually we as a people in the public don't like it, and we force people who can and can't get away with these kind of things. So again, it's very important, this case, for so many reasons. But I'd just like to take it back, because we need to be, you know, thorough as far as we can be. So when this happened in 2010 and Julian got big and WikiLeaks got big, they, as I understand, but I don't know, you two do know, they started going after him. And there was this thing in Sweden about some kind of molestation or rape or something went on, right? This is part of this, right? That all of a sudden came to the surface. Is that right?
That's right. So the Swedish case, which has now been dropped, and he was he's never been charged. Yeah. It's now dropped. But just to sort of brief people on what happened, there were allegations that came about in August 2010. He stayed in Sweden to cooperate with the investigation. The chief prosecutor of Stockholm dropped the case, saying there's no evidence of a crime here, so we're not going to pursue it. That decision was then appealed, and a second prosecutor came onto the case and decided to pursue it. He remained in the country for more than 5 weeks, offering to answer the allegations, trying to get it dealt with.
And to give you a perspective of time, Jennifer, forgive me for interrupting, that happened, these allegations that happened in Sweden, happens 3 months before the big explosion with the...
That's right.
...with the collateral murder.
It happened, actually...
So it was reactivated, as you said.
The allegations emerged in August, which was after collateral murder and after the Afghan war publications, prior to the Iraq war publications, prior to Cablegate.
Okay.
But the case sat dormant for many weeks. He offered his testimony, he had the permission of the prosecutor to leave the country, and it was only when they were about to start publishing Cablegate that she sought an arrest warrant for his arrest for questioning in circumstances. So she sought an arrest warrant to put him into prison in order to question him in Sweden in circumstances when we were offering testimony. Yeah. So there was no need for it. That was dragged out for years and years and years.
Also, let's talk about the Swedish case, because the case was about sexual allegations with a rape connotation. I think the word rape was mentioned, but in fact there was no rape as such as we understood it. Within the Swedish law, there's a case of rape, and it was a case about him not using a condom. Apparently the situation was that he was having consensual sex with a woman, and at some point he didn't use a condom, and that's constituted without being consensual, supposedly, but that constituted a case of rape, even if the sex was consensual.
Sweden has particular sexual offence laws, and the way that is actually the offence that was under investigation, which again he was never charged for, related to consensual sex and about the use of a condom or not. And it was Sweden has rape, as we would understand it, and then what they call, and this is a contradiction in terms in my mind, but minor rape, which is a lesser form of offence, which was the allegation.
That was the allegation against Assange.
Yes, that was the allegation. But of course, that allegation, they have closed the investigation. He has always asserted his innocence, that it was all consensual. And in fact, the whole process did no justice either for the women or for him.
Yeah.
So he was denied due process, he was denied the presumption of innocence, and this case was dragged out in ways that I think were harmful for everyone involved.
Yeah.
And so thankfully that case is now closed.
Yes. Yeah, so from there, this is when this idea of Julian being extradited to America started, yes? So did he effectively, you know, get out of there and go to the Ecuadorian embassy, or what was the path?
He jumped bail.
Well, he fought that extradition request,
yeah,
into the within the British legal system, but when his options were being basically closed, yeah, his last resource was to seek for asylum, and he knocked at Ecuador's door.
And it's important to understand that at that time, the proceedings for the UK were simply about the validity or otherwise of the European arrest warrant. So we had very little ability to argue our concern about onward extradition to the United States in the very narrow perspective of whether the European arrest warrant was valid or not. But our bigger concern was that once he was taken into custody in Sweden, he would be put on a plane in handcuffs, taken to a prison in Sweden, questioned with respect to the Swedish case, which has now been dropped, but then he would be in a position where the US could potentially seek his extradition, and he would be in custody. He would have no ability to fight it except in the Swedish legal system, and the Swedish system has extradited people. Every single request to Sweden for extradition to the US has been granted in the past 10 years.
Right.
So he was concerned that if he didn't seek asylum before being taken into custody, then he would be stuck in a process.
Yeah.
And that's why he sought asylum when he did. It was a preemptive decision to protect himself from US extradition. Now, at that time, we had, of course, been seeking through the Australian government and to the UK government assurances that if he went back to Sweden, he would not be sent to the US, and they refused to give them. So in those circumstances, he felt that he had no other choice, and that's when he walked into the Ecuadorian embassy.
Right, brilliant. And when he came into the Ecuadorian embassy, this was 2012?
Yes, August 2012.
June 2012.
Okay.
Yeah, and Fidel, you were there?
Yeah.
Good man.
Yeah.
And so this process, this relationship with Ecuador started there. Why Ecuador? Why Ecuador?
Well, I met Julian before he came to the embassy. And the relationship started, I think, a year ago when Ecuador decided to approach WikiLeaks in order to have public all the cables related to Ecuador, the cable gate, cables.
The magma
about
information
about,
that WikiLeaks was handling at the time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as you say, there's something like 250,000 cables altogether from all over the world, and from Ecuador, something like 1,400, and this is a period 94 or maybe 97 to 2005. So in Ecuador, WikiLeaks chose two major newspapers in order to feed them the information. They were cherry picking the cables as they suit them, which was the opposition for the against the government. And the government felt that something is not right. There's a lot more to be known and to be, and I think Ecuador was the only country that have that approach, that request WikiLeaks to publish everything.
Oh, I see.
Independently if it was damaging or favorably to the government. So WikiLeaks agreed to do that,
yeah,
in May 2011. And that was, I think, the beginning of the relationship. After that, Julian had President Correa as host in one of his programs. He had a program where he interviewed different world leaders. I think it was a mutual empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
there's a nice fluidity between a government from Ecuador,
of a small Latin American
Correa
country,
wanting open,
yeah,
and transparency, even if it is good or bad, to understand more of how the world operates. So it's a really nice merging of philosophy,
yeah, and
pure democracy and pure respect for freedom of speech in the media.
I think one of the strong points of WikiLeaks is that basically it's a research bank of information available to anybody. So as you say, some things might seem trivial, not interest, but if you have 10 million documents online and you have the platform suited for easy searching, you find many things.
Of course, they will be from the hilarious and trivial to corporation business.
So we learn from WikiLeaks how our diplomats or senior ministers were basically so close to the US embassy. So, for example, a foreign minister will consult with a US ambassador about who to name Ecuador ambassador in Washington, or if it's okay for the Ecuadorian then president to go and visit President Chavez in Venezuela, or the defense minister visiting the U.S. ambassador at her residence in order to fit her confidential information. So it was a big thing for
WikiLeaks can be seen as unveiling the dirty deeds of the empire, empire being the United States of America. Well, the Americans will never use that word. They are an empire because of the financial and military power, mainly the latter, the military power they have around the world. But I want to go back to the current situation at the moment, because it's a very curious situation. Now, we talk about, with the change of government from Correa to Moreno, there have been discussions about removing the diplomatic immunity. At least there have been discussions, has not happened. Assange now being an Ecuadorian citizen from December 2017. The British government insisting that jumping the bailout is still an offence. Hence, if he walks out of the embassy, he will be arrested. Mm-hmm. And the possibility that arrest will imply an extradition to the United States. So his legal options are in certain ways becoming more precarious right now. Jennifer, aren't they?
Well, Ecuador has publicly stated that they will continue his protection and his asylum will continue. But there has been a huge amount of speculation in the media as to whether
That's an official position from Moreno's government.
The official position is that it will continue, but we have concerns given the amount of speculation in the media and reports from sources within the Ecuadorian government in the media stating that his protection is at risk. And if that is the case and he's forced to leave, he will be brought before a judge and a decision will be made about whether to pursue him for a bail offence. So he hasn't been charged. And the bail offence is a minor offence in this country. It is at most 3 months in prison or a fine. Now, he's always said he's very happy to face that. He's very happy to face British justice, but not at the expense of American injustice. The problem that we have is that once he's before a court, once he's in that process, if there is an extradition request from the United States, and we expect there will be, given what we've been hearing from the Trump administration's key figures in the Department of Justice, it's likely there is one, and it will be executed in circumstances where he will have no other options.
That's the other thing. The death penalty might apply to him on treason or something of the sort. I mean, which charge? But yes, death penalty could be an option.
Well, the death penalty was an option for Chelsea Manning. They decided not to pursue that particular charge. But certainly, if we look at the way that Chelsea Manning was treated within her proceedings, though her sentence was since commuted by Obama, the potential allegations against Julian that we say he has a full answer to, he's a publisher, he shouldn't be prosecuted for these offences, but it could be life in prison.
Yeah.
It's a very, very serious situation. And so the protection that Ecuador granted, and I want to make this clear, was not simply about protecting him from extradition to the death penalty, because in any event, the British government won't extradite people to face the death penalty. So if that is the allegation and that is the potential consequence, the British government wouldn't extradite. The concern was about him facing prosecution in the United States at all as a publisher and the treatment that he would suffer as a publisher, knowing what has happened to Chelsea Manning. So to the Ecuadorian government is now, I think, seeking to turn it into a different question about death penalty or not, and that was not the reason for his protection.
And let's clarify this. Chelsea Manning was identified as the main sources for many of the leaks to WikiLeaks. He was sent to prison, indeed, and he was pardoned by Obama before finishing his administration. And incidentally, anecdotically, very recently, his Australian entry visa was denied by the Australian government.
Yes.
Or, I don't know what reasons, whatever.
It is incredibly disappointing. So he wasn't, Chelsea, she was not, in fact, pardoned by Obama. Obama commuted her sentence.
Commuted his sentence.
So
okay,
the conviction.
What is the difference?
Well, a pardon is a full pardon, so then your record is
clean.
Effectively clean.
Okay.
But if your sentence is commuted, you are simply released from prison. But the conviction stands. And that means that when she applies for visas to go anywhere in the world,
she will have a criminal record.
And has to report that. Now, liberal democracies within Europe, including Germany, have welcomed Chelsea to the country, welcomed by civilian making the invitation, and the government has not prevented her from entering to be able to speak to the public. That the Australian government has taken this decision is very disappointing, and it is a concern for me that the Australian government would not want to be seen with other liberal democracies who respect free speech to allow her to come to the country. And in fact, Chelsea Manning's due to come to Britain to be honoured by the ICA, and what will be interesting to see is how the British government reacts
to that. Okay, interesting. I was saying to you just before the programme that if information is the hard currency of the world nowadays, Chelsea Manning, Assange and Christopher Snowden, they are the Robin Hoods of the digital era. Now, sounds a little bit presumptuous, that statement, but the point is this. A huge amount of media is created around them because of that.
Mm.
That media has to be very complicated for you to navigate as a lawyer, is it not?
It is, and we are very mindful that everything that we do in this case is very much under the watchful eye of the mainstream media and media around the world, and also that this case is very much about how it plays out politically and in the media sphere as much as it is in the courtroom, which is unusual. Not all cases are like this. So we constantly have to have our mind on what the media coverage is, who's saying what, and how that impacts upon his case, because this case is very political.
But also because it's very political, it's all Manichaean almost. It's black and white, isn't it?
Mm.
And there have been certain instances with Assange, for example, former media partners like The Guardian is critical of him. He has been in difficult situations with other people. And it's also the relationship about what kind of information he passed on to the Trump administration. And so there are these elements there hanging in the air.
Well, he didn't pass on information to the Trump administration. He published information that WikiLeaks received. WikiLeaks received material about the Democratic National Congress, which demonstrated corruption within the party around whether it would be Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton to be the nominee, which was essential information in the public interest, and certainly the New York Times said they would have published it had they received that material. Now, of course, we know how that has been, that story has played out in the United States with many accusations that there was some sort of
So what we're talking about is the machinations with the Democratic Party to select Hillary Clinton instead of Bernie Sanders.
That's right. And a number of the leadership in the DNC had to resign after that revelation came out. There's been a fraud lawsuit filed by Bernie Sanders supporters and donors to the DNC as a result. That material was no doubt in the public interest. It was material that the public ought to know. Now, the question was about giving information to the Trump administration. They didn't do that. They published information about the Democratic Party during the course of an election, which many saw as assisting Trump to win the election. Now, WikiLeaks doesn't determine what information they receive. They don't determine when they receive it. All they can do is receive it, verify it, and publish it when it's newsworthy. And that's exactly what they did.
So I have
it might not suit my politics or yours, but...
No, fine,
That language is so important here. As you were saying, Jennifer, it's really important. He didn't pass it on, he published it. And the case wasn't pardoned, it was... What was
commuted.
The word?
Commuted.
Commuted. So if you're a respectable journalist, you need to be publishing those kind of things because they're very different words,
sure,
aren't they? They're very different words. And I mean, of course, I mean, many, many people... Eventually, that information came out, and many people of the more conscious left were extremely disappointed about the Hillary and Bernie Sanders, event. Do you think that Barack Obama also is in on the game of trying to shut down this kind of media operation, i.e. to go after Juden? Do you think he's also... is no different to anyone else?
Well, of course, the criminal investigation into WikiLeaks commenced under the Obama administration. It was commenced by Eric Holder, the Attorney General at the time, and pursued throughout the Obama administration. Now, it is a great thing that Obama commuted Chelsea Manning's sentence and a great act As a departing act as a president. But let's not forget that Obama prosecuted more whistleblowers than any other president combined during his term as president. So to say that, you know, is Obama part of this story? Absolutely, because this commenced under his administration. It has been continued with great fervour by the Trump administration.
Also, immigration under Obama, apparently, from what I understand but don't know, was incredibly aggressive. More Latin Americans and Central Americans were forcibly transferred back to their country than anyone else. That's right, isn't it?
I think that's true. That's, as I understand it, that's correct. And I think there was a big problem in the United States having Obama as president, a perception that he was more progressive and a perception that he was doing the right thing. And it was hard that the left and certainly progressives found it much harder to criticize him. Yet we're seeing the opposite with the Trump administration, which is a good thing for government accountability. But I do think that Obama got a free pass on many things, including the prosecution of whistleblowers.
Well, I agree, and Obama was a lawyer as well, and a man that campaigned on change. You know, the irony is that maybe actually Trump, in some cases, is in his trade policies are probably what Bernie Sanders may have been doing on the more protectionist, challenging globalization sphere, etc. But Fidel, so you are in the embassy as a consul and also involved in arts and things like that. So you meet Julian, you've known him before, now he's in your embassy. You must feel very proud of your embassy and your country and your political people for doing what they've done.
For sure, yes. I think it was quite astonishing, I would say, that Ecuador will take that bet to challenge imperial powers, because that's what is protecting Julian.
A small Latin American country, yes.
Small Latin American country within the international law stands up face to face to United States, which is our main trade partner, and against the UK. That took a lot of courage, and I prize that a lot.
And let's go to the mundane. The Ecuadorian embassy is not that big. It's a small embassy.
Yeah,
I've been there.
Of course.
Because
of
I remember
course.
The Colombian embassy being next door, and it was exactly the same office space.
It's exactly the same size.
So he has a room by himself. He has been there 6 years now. 6 years.
6 years.
Yeah.
Six
so years. He sleeps in.
Well, we have adapted to the situation, okay, which is difficult for Julian especially, but for everybody. And he has his private space at the embassy.
Can I continue with the domestic and the mundane? Does anybody cook for him? Takeaways? How does he get fed? I mean, that kind of stuff.
No, I understand. Now. Since I left the embassy, many media approach me, and they are very interested in
all
that day-to-day basic things. I'm quite a bit reluctant to speak about that.
Okay, fine.
Only because I think they distract us
from the main picture.
From the main political picture.
Yeah. Okay.
But
this must be difficult, really difficult, because it's a small space.
Of course.
So, if being a small country standing up to America, I can relate to that, because where I come from in New Zealand, we didn't enable nuclear warships into our waters, and the Americans supposedly got a bit annoyed about this. But I don't know how much pressure they really put on us. Possibly. Have they put noticeable pressure on Ecuador since this has occurred?
Well, I think with Correa as president, they realize that there's not much point in increasing pressures. At some point, Ecuador expelled the U.S. ambassador.
Really? Which year is this?
Based on the WikiLeaks cables, that was in 2011, I think, 2010, I don't remember. Ecuador and the biggest U.S. military base in South America, the military base of
in Ecuador.
In Ecuador, yes.
Really? Wow! I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I think they did realize that under Korea is not much point increasing pressure. But let's not forget that Ecuador does not have its own currency.
Yes, I was going to mention that. There's something interesting fact there. In the Korea administration, the Ecuadorian currency was dollarized, i.e. the dollar is the national currency.
I need to correct that. That was not under Korea administration. That happened in year 2000. So
2000?
Yes.
Wow.
So Korea came into power. Earlier. Korea came into power in 2007.
Okay, much earlier. Yeah,
but,
sorry.
Losing your currency is something that probably is not so difficult to get in, but very, very difficult to
get out.
So we still have the dollar as currency. If they want to increase pressure, and I think they are doing it, is a lot they can they can do.
Did Korea ever attempt to change the currency to return to sucre? Was sucre, wasn't it before?
Yeah, no, he knew that was politically very difficult thing to do. He tried to implement some other measures will help Ecuador with its economy, because if you don't have currency, it's like fighting just with one hand. So he tried to introduce the digital money to run next to the dollar. He didn't succeed on that one. But the bet at the time was that at some point, South America, which at some point had 80% of the governments as progressive, will come to a regional integration, which will produce something like Europe has with
the new left, the new Latin American left of
Mercosur.
That could be the way out.
The notice 2010.
Did any other countries, you know, and during that time, like Bolivia, Peru, Brazil, go along with this? Would have they done what Ecuador did? Do you think Evo Morales would have followed?
Yes. Well, that was interesting enough, because I was going to ask Jennifer, has any other country in the world at all spread sympathy, support for what he's faced?
Well, not publicly that I'm aware of, and certainly there have been expressions of support for him by various leaders of opposition parties, including Imran Khan, who's now just become the Prime Minister of Pakistan. He also was interviewed on the same program that President Correa was interviewed on, that Julian hosted. He was also had an expression of support from Anwar Ibrahim, who is the leader of the opposition in Malaysia, who's just been released from prison and looks like becoming the next Prime Minister of Malaysia. So I think there is a huge amount of support for Julian among the public in different parts of the world, because I think there's a public perception issue here, which people presume that the way that Julian is perceived in the media in the UK and Britain is public opinion, and it's not. So if I travel to Mexico or to Pakistan or to Colombia or to India, to any country that has felt the impact of British or American imperialism, when they find out that I'm Julian's lawyers, they are so excited and want to tell me what a hero he is and why aren't there protests out the front of the Ecuadorian embassy to help get him released. And the answer is, I think, a media vilification campaign.
Yeah. May I just add to that the Ecuadorian embassy, since Julian came in, became a center of attention, and we had so many visitors from all over the world.
Yeah, I mean
more than 1,000 by now, literally, from all backgrounds, mainly, obviously, from the progressive side, intellectuals, artists,
Pamela Anderson,
Hollywood stars. Well,
I know, whatever, but that's it.
Yes.
But also, interestingly, Pussy Riot. So, Julian's seen as being some, you know, there's
exactly.
all this narrative about Russia and connection to Russia. I mean, Pussy Riot comes to visit, has been to visit him in the embassy, and he supports them. So
it has been, in terms of projection, international projection, what we call public diplomacy, for at least for the public opinion, a lot of liberal public opinion about the world, has been a very good move for Ecuador. I wanted to ask you about, now that you mentioned Pussy Riot, how much murkier have the world has become because of Russia now, and the perception of Russia and that connection with Russia, and Snowden being now in Moscow as a political refugee almost.
I think this narrative, which is being pushed particularly by the Democrats in the US to explain why they lost the election, which I think had far more to do with
Clinton and the perception of Clinton within the United States.
That and many other things. But that narrative about Russia, particularly the implication and the suggestion, which is false, that there was some sort of scheme somehow between WikiLeaks and Russia, which is just, I mean, Julian has denied it. The source was not a state source. And in fact, the whole point of having anonymous Dropbox systems, and even, I mean, Professor Jack Goldsmith at Harvard University, who was the Assistant Attorney General under Bush, has even made this point, which is the whole point of WikiLeaks and the whole point of having anonymous Dropbox systems is that it doesn't matter who your source is. Provided the information is verified, it doesn't matter who the source is. And in fact, many news organisations don't know who their source is as long as the information is correct. Yet this debate about WikiLeaks and whether it was Russian intelligence as a source, one, Julian has said it wasn't, but apart from that, there are many instances in which newspapers publish information where they don't know who the source is, and so how can they say whether or not it was intelligence service or not?
So, Julia, you might have been
And in fact, they do that. Publish material from the intelligence services yeah. all the time.
Jennifer, you might have been asked this several times before. That statement by Trump about, if Russia, if you're listening to me, could you please leak the thousands of emails from Hillary Clinton? That connection, what would be your answer to that when people talk about that possible connection between that statement done by Trump, Russia, and Assange, that triangle? You would say it doesn't exist, but what would be the explanation that you would give?
At any political moment, when there's an issue, I mean, WikiLeaks does it. Julian often, or the WikiLeaks Twitter account, will tweet out saying, we are really interested in receiving X, Y, or Z. And they put it out there publicly in the hope that somebody will, in fact, provide that information. Now, leaks happen at very interesting times when people are disgruntled by a particular event or otherwise. So the fact that Trump happened to call for that to be released, it's not surprising that someone who is supportive of Trump may well have ensured that that was the case, or someone who was disgruntled with the Democratic Party would make sure that that information was released. But it doesn't necessarily demonstrate in any way, shape or form, and certainly be very far from any kind of proof of any kind of collusion.
But you talk about perception, and that's very important. I agree with you. It's fundamental. It's crucial for the outcome of this case. And there's a perception somewhere that perhaps Assange, in an act of desperation, actually said, okay, I might actually support Trump here in one way or another. You know, hypothetically speaking, I'm talking about a perception that you read in the press, and Assange saying, okay, fine, I might collaborate with Trump. Probably he might pardon me in the future. Some kind of political maneuvering during the elections.
Like I said, WikiLeaks doesn't control what information they receive.
Okay.
They publish what they receive. That they publish it at a time of political significance is like any other media organisation that publishes key information when it's newsworthy. So I don't see any particular connection around that. I mean, it was very obvious. Julian made it very obvious that his opinion of both candidates, saying that he had an incredibly dim view of both of them. So it's not as if he was particularly supportive of either of them in real terms, and in fact called out for Trump's tax returns to be released. He called for material on Trump. He even asked, WikiLeaks was actively requesting for this information.
It hasn't been leaked yet, actually. Yeah.
As far as I sort of am aware, Trump is one of the few people in America that's actually ever called for peace and good relations between Russia. And he is who he is, and he is maligned who he is. It's very bizarre. I mean, Obama and Hillary and the Democrats have been almost warlike towards Russia for quite a long time now. And as we know, as you said, Jennifer, when certain things happen, people look to displace things or, you know, blame other, you know, factors. And the left have been awful at this, trying to create this Cold War Russian dynamic. It's horrendous. But I'd just like to say the public perception might be that someone like WikiLeaks and Julian are troublemakers and they're stirring things up, which is, it's wrong. This is partly the reason why this is so important to do this show and to further do stuff to help Julian and WikiLeaks, because this is actually about all of us having transparency and accountability and holding power, whoever it is, to account. Now, where I come from, if you do anything like that, you're always called a troublemaker or actually a shit stirrer. That's what you're called. But actually, this perception is a big part of the whole thing, because the perception is very important. It's very far from the truth. But just because we've got about 4 or 5 minutes or something, I just wanted to say to Fidel also, Fidel said something prior to this once. He said, Ecuador is really known now because of Julian, which is absolutely wonderful, but Mr. Correa and your people and your government also have one of the most amazing constitutions in the world. You give, you know, human rights to the land, you have cosmological things going on. Is this correct?
It's absolutely correct, and probably that awake empathy from Julian when he decided to knock Ecuador's door, having at least 250 other embassies available in London. I mean, when Julian came into the embassy, Ecuador was giving huge fights and he was having huge achievements in different aspects. Yeah, the constitution, which was called by the BBC as the greenest constitution.
Yeah.
Produce on
ecology
on,
was at the center of it.
It was celebrated by environmentalists around the world.
Which year is that constitution? Remind me.
2008. It's a constitution that prohibits any foreign military troops in the country. Sadly, Mr. Moreno's finding
the way to
reinstate that.
An amendment to the constitution.
It's a constitution which has the concept of universal citizenship, which is basically the right to immigrate is there. Nobody could be called illegal just because it doesn't have the right. So Ecuador became the first open-door country that doesn't require visa to anybody. Ecuador was already giving a big fight against the Chevron Texaco Corporation in the biggest environmental suit ever.
Bigger than the BP scandal in the Gulf of
much
Mexico,
bigger,
wasn't it?
Yeah. Much bigger than that.
But
yes.
It didn't have much media coverage.
This was my point.
Yeah, exactly. This, you know, it is perception, that we're talking about perception and the media and the kind of stuff. Yes. I mean, countries which in certain ways dictate the news. Yep. Russia, the United States, Great Britain, they are countries that dictate the news. They are countries that do not dictate the news. It's part of the center peripheric flow of information.
But it all goes well with a new consciousness, yeah, which is what WikiLeaks is about. Transparency, yeah. open media and Ecuador being a country that has actually got proper environmental consciousness.
I've got a last question for Jennifer, and it's about WikiLeaks. What is the present and future of WikiLeaks, in your opinion? And secondly, has Julian, Mani, and anybody else, or people like them, established a precedent that cannot be stopped?
Well, before WikiLeaks, we didn't talk about the right to know in the way that we do now, and I think we have WikiLeaks to thank for that. As I mentioned, WikiLeaks is a very small, robust organisation that continues to publish and to operate despite massive challenges. So in the past 8 years, we've seen a financial blockade where Visa and MasterCard prevented any donations. We saw them, and so different funding mechanisms had to be created to keep them alive. We've seen them publish, you know, material that's really shaken the intelligence services in the US. They are incredibly brave, and I think they will continue. But at the same time, that legacy is really important. It's changed the way we think about information and our right to information. And it's also changed the way media organizations operate. Like I mentioned earlier, many organizations have adopted an anonymous Dropbox style model, which is modeled upon the WikiLeaks model, which protects both sources and protects journalists from potentially being prosecuted for revealing their sources, because if they don't know who it's from, they can't be prosecuted for contempt. And so this is part of, I think, which has been a sea change in the way that we think about information. And as you said earlier, I think not just the way that WikiLeaks has operated, but the establishment's pushback on WikiLeaks certainly taught me something that you mentioned earlier, that information is power. and whoever controls the information has power. I will never forget, in 2010, Julian was basically a guy with a backpack and a bunch of information, and he was perceived as one of the most powerful people in the world.
Yeah, with a laptop and a rucksack, indeed. Yeah, and curiously enough, just as a parallel, we live in a world which we talk about fake news. Mm. WikiLeaks have not been affected by that. It's sort of kind of on the tangent, completely outside that narrative of the fake news.
Because WikiLeaks is the antidote to fake news.
Oh, fake news, indeed.
They introduce this notion of scientific journalism. So when I stand up in court and I cite a proposition to a judge, I'm expected to be able to tell you which case it came from. If you're an academic and you cite a proposition in your paper, you have a footnote reference so people can go and check whether the proposition you state is accurate. The media has never had that before. And what WikiLeaks does allows the public, if they so choose, to go and look at the documents themselves and see what bias the journalist is showing in the way that they're writing the story. And they call that scientific journalism. So because WikiLeaks has a 100% accuracy record in terms of everything they've published has been verified and proven to be accurate, they are the antidote to fake news.
Yeah, indeed. A very last question from me. How hopeful are you this case against Julian Assange will resolve shortly?
This case has been going on for more than
officially 6 years.
6 years inside the embassy, but 8 years when we look back to 2010. I certainly hope in an ideal world that it will be resolved soon, because I'm very concerned about his health. I think it's important that we resolve this. This is a publisher who is being arbitrarily detained in a Western liberal democracy. It's time this is over. But the prospect of it happening, the politics in this are very, very difficult, and it requires political action that I'm not sure will be forthcoming.
If we have a change of government, which many of us think would be a very good idea in this country, and a Labour...
A general election might resolve that.
Do you think Jeremy Corbyn will come to play here in a helpful way?
Well, I understand that Jeremy Corbyn's position, at least he has spoken positively when he was a backbencher about WikiLeaks, and I would hope that a Corbyn government would certainly stand against US extradition for a publisher, and certainly that's the understanding that I have of the Labour Party's position.
I tell you what, Jennifer, Brexit might solve it. You know, a major crisis, Brexit, general election, Corbyn winning, voila.
And I was going to say, Jennifer, you also hugely impressive and doing marvellous work and have been very brave too. So well done to you for doing all of this. And do you ever experience any sort of untoward hassling or activity that comes your way?
Historically, yes. So back in 2010, we received a letter from the State Department that made exaggerated claims against Julian Assange as editor of WikiLeaks about what would happen as a result of the publication of Cablegate, saying it was putting at risk terrorist operations around the world, US military operations. And they included my name in that letter and then released it to the press. And after that, I started getting death threats and a whole range of other sort of threatening letters and the like. So there have been lawyers' rights watch complaints about the way that I was treated by the US government. And since that time, I've been stopped at airports. I'm on apparently on the counterterrorism watch list for the American government's travel.
Okay. So you are not able to visit the United States?
No, I'm absolutely able to, but I get I get flagged and they have to check my identity when I come in and out of the country. Now, is that a result of my work on this case? I don't know for sure, but I can't imagine what else I could possibly have done to have attracted that kind of attention.
And the Australian government, how do they treat you?
The Australian government has been supportive, in fact. When I was stopped at Heathrow Airport and told I was on a watch list, the Australian government did make inquiries and said that they were very concerned about it, that it had nothing to do with them and you know, made all the right sounds. So I think as a lawyer, we are perceived to have certain protections and that we ought to have the ability to defend our clients and defend their interests fervently, no matter who that client is. And the Australian government has been supportive of that publicly.
And Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, I mean, what's their position regarding your case or the case that you're representing?
In Julian's case, we have had some very positive statements of support from Human Rights Watch. The Human Rights Watch General Counsel has raised concern about his health, has sought to visit him in the Ecuadorian embassy since the visitors ban started, and in fact was not permitted to come to visit him. They are concerned about the precedent that would be set if he's extradited to the United States and faces prosecution, what that means for free speech. But unfortunately, otherwise, we haven't had a lot of NGO activity in support of Julian's personal case. I think the issue with Sweden has been very difficult to... It's resulted in a loss of a lot of support. But more recently, with the Democratic National Congress suit against WikiLeaks, basically set, which is the most remarkable thing, that a political party in the United States would seek to make it a civil wrong to publish their information during an election, that you could sue the media for civil damages for publishing their information, is a terrifying precedent. And as a result of that case, we've seen the Committee to Protect Journalists and a whole range of free speech groups speak out in support of WikiLeaks that this should not happen. So I hope that if and when there is a US extradition request, that the free speech groups will certainly be behind it, and they've been making all of the right sounds. Human Rights Watch is with us, and I hope the other NGOs would come forward with their support.
I think in conclusion, I mean, it's very obvious that, in my opinion, that the WikiLeaks Julian Assange case is even bigger than he isn't a troublemaker.
Well, the best journalists are troublemakers.
Yeah. Okay, so on behalf of ZTRradio.podomatic.com and extraradio1.com, we very much are thrilled and thank Fidel Navais, the ex-consul for the Ecuadorian embassy, for coming in. Thank you very much, Fidel. And Jennifer Robinson, human rights lawyer for Julian Assange, thank you very much for coming in.
And you're very welcome.
Whoever listens to this will get behind this cause for all the right reasons that you know. So thank you, Juan.
Yeah, no problem. And this program will be podcasted and distributed accordingly. Well, the usual stuff.
Thank you for listening. And I encourage everyone to get out and support this cause because it is your cause as well.
ZTR Radio from London, a bilingual radio to listen and think.